tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 435 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Hello.
Well, as we were just discussing before we started recording, we have five premieres now on the block, so we're going to try to speed up so that we don't keep making two-hour-long episodes. So I think we're going to do like a minimized version of our recaps. We're not going to go over every single thing that happens. I think that's going to help. But yeah, Before we get into Daima, let's first talk about the news. And the only item I had written down was what they did this week that was unique to Toonami, which was they had a video game review. It was for Doom: The Dark Ages.
I actually have not played. I played all the classic Doom games, and I've even played Doom 3. But I haven't played any of the new, like, modern era Doom stuff. I know that they're well liked, and I know this is like a prequel of the modern era stuff, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it takes place before Doom 2016, and then so it's like Dark Ages, Doom 2016, and then Doom Eternal is the timeline for the new Dooms.
Okay, I haven't played them either. I've watched videos of like Doom 2016, which was like amazing looking, and I did play, like, at the time they came out with a VR game. Like, it wasn't the same game, but it was like a VR, like Doom V. It was called Doom VFR, and it kind of ran a bit on the same engine. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, I've heard that these games are good. I know this latest one. I've heard that, like, I've heard some complaints, which I guess depending on what you're looking for, it might be a good thing, might not be, where it turns everything to 11 and it just stays there the whole time. It's on 11. And it's just like, I don't know. I've heard some people say it gets a little tiring because it's just amped up as far as you can go the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know if it's enough for me. I mean, like, as cool as it is, I don't know if I would be drawn to play those games, but I do like to watch clips of it because they're just so technically impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, worth mentioning, a rare 9.0 review score.
That's a high score from...
it's like 12 on the Toonami scale, like when you put Toonami scale in normal scale.
Yeah. Yeah, they were really praising it, too, during the discussion of it, or the review. So, yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty much it. There wasn't really any other news this week. You know, we're on episode 10 of both Blue Exorcist and Bleach. So I think we've got two more of each of those. Is that right? Are they 12?
Well, Bleach has more.
Yeah, I'm assuming we're rolling to the second core for Bleach. I don't know about the Blue Exorcist, though.
Blue Exorcist seasons are more like separated. So I don't think it's a bigger question, I think, if do we get Blue Exorcist season 3? And we gotta, if that's the case, I don't remember, I don't know what the season is called, but if that's the case, I assume we'd be getting, actually, I don't know, is that something they would announce, or would they just roll right into it?
I don't know.
Just say on one of those schedules they show up on their Facebook, like, because they said for this one, like, Kyoto arc is the current arc, I don't know what the next arc is, it might be like Tokyo arc or something, I don't know, but you just might say that in an upcoming schedule, and that'll be the announcement.
It'll be basically released tomorrow.
I don't think until this discussion did I really put it together that both Bleach and Blue Exorcist could just continue. Like, I think at first, for some reason, I was thinking both of them were up for change, but Bleach obviously doesn't make any sense. And Blue Exorcist, yeah, technically it could, but you're right, there's more. So they may just keep airing it.
The Blue Exorcist Season 3 is called the Shimane Illuminati Saga.
How long is it? 12 episodes? 24 episodes?
12 episodes again.
Okay. I know nothing.
And it's worth mentioning, let's just say they go straight into Blue Exorcist Season 3, that there is a 7-year gap between the end of Season 2 and the beginning of Season 3.
Production-wise, like, not in the timeline
production-wise, not in the timeline of the series. But yeah, like, good clarification. But yeah, if we go straight from that 1 week to the next, yeah, it's like there's 7 years time passed. Not in the story, but in making these episodes. Wow. So that'll be interesting to see. if we get that.
All right, well, let's move on to our first show of the block this week, which is Daima. Dragon Ball Daima Episode 7, Collar, which is, of course, about Pansy's magic collar that she wears. Like I said, I'm going to briefly go over the six bullet points I have here, and then we'll just discuss the episode overall. So these are the key points to take away. So Bulma can't fix the plane back on Earth. That's when Hybus arrives. And so Hybus is taking those guys, which I think during the course of the episode, they end up showing up. The Gendarmerie use Pansy's collar to track them, which she's really bummed about. Goku ends up using instant transmission to hide and then fight the Gendarmerie, which is, a thing he hasn't shown off to the other members of the Demon Realm before. And then after the break, they end up, after defeating the Gendarmerie, they take their plane, and the Supreme Kai can just remove Pansy's collar, which she thought could never be removed. We learned that Supreme Kai's name is Nahare, which I wanted to write that down because I thought that might be important. Then Pansy ends up speaking to some bird or bug character named Pearl that ends up giving them a new pin code to use Sir Warp in the future now that they have a new plane. And then the last note was that they actually end up arriving at Tamagami number 3 and Goku challenges him to a fight. So those were the overall big bullet points of this episode. Seda, what were your thoughts? Are there anything else you want to add specific?
I guess we get a little tiny bit of lore here with the Kais again, where like when we're first introduced to the Kais, it's King Kai, and he's just some blue guy on a planet, right? And then like in like the Buu saga, we learn that there's other Kais, like, and then we are introduced to like Supreme Kais. And at some point we learn like Supreme Guy's name is Shin. I don't even remember like where that comes from. They just call him Shin. Like that's his name.
Yeah, they have mentioned that in this episode too. He's like
in the Buu saga. I don't remember when. I think it's when he introduced himself to the Z Fighters before he revealed his Supreme Kai.
He went by Shin.
And then later on is like action Supreme Kai. I think that's how I recall how it went down.
I'm trying to remember. Did he first show up in like the tournament? Like in the Demon Realm or the Kai Realm,
the Budokai Tenkaichi, I think 23, I think it was.
And he goes by Shin, like a stage name, I guess. I'm trying to remember exactly here, but anyways, almost, yeah, we learned that
it was kind of like his Earth name, and then but in this episode, he mentions that. Well, I'm Shin, but actually, my real name here is Nahare, is what he said.
Which you know is totally believable that he would have a demon or a Majin name. So, sure. But Goku tries using it, and he's just like, it doesn't sound right. I'll call you Shin. Or Supreme Kai. I think he says, I'll just call you Supreme Kai.
I like that part where they try to basically fix or prevent a plot hole, because you'll be wondering, since it takes place for Super, you'll be wondering, like, why doesn't Goku call him Nahare, like, all the time interacting in Super enough? And other later
good point.
And also in the end of Z as well, like, he calls him Supreme Kai or whatnot, and you're like, why? If Goku knows his real name, why doesn't he use his real name? But he just headed off, be like, okay, I know your real name, but I'm just never going to use it. So I thought that was kind of amusing.
Yeah,
I didn't even think of it that way, but it makes sense. I mean, to me, it just kind of seems like in Goku's character to be like, I just want to keep calling you Supreme Kai because it's too hard to call you something.
He's not as bad as Luffy, but he is got a little bit of that where he's just going to call somebody by their easy to remember name.
I mean, is Supreme Kai actually easier than Nahare? That seems like it's more of a mouthful. Though, I will say it's amusing that Goku gets Nahare's name right in the first try. He still can't get Goryeo's name right.
Oh, yeah. The other part of this episode that I thought was, mildly interesting, maybe. This is sort of I don't want to say filler episode, but, you know, I feel like didn't move a whole lot. But, yeah, I guess every Majin on this third Demon World has the collar, even a princess. And I guess they have it their whole life, and it grows like with them. So like, to the people of this world, I guess that's just like as normal as drinking water or whatever they drink. They just have these colors, and then Supreme Kai just can remove it, I suppose. And it's, he even says that it's not like a special magic or ability. He's like, anyone can learn this. And so that's kind of interesting. I assume this will become a thing, at least to some degree, where they just, these collars, this servitude or whatever, they get, I assume they'll be mass removed at some point. Kind of an interesting, I don't know. Like, I'm not exactly sure where they're going to go with that.
I kind of took it, at first I thought they were kind of setting up a like, oh, well, you know, Supreme Kai is, of course, he's like an elite because he's from the second world or whatever. And so it's like, I thought it was a classism type thing
that he has a key to do it.
Yeah, but then when he brings up, it's like, oh, it's a skill anyone can use. I'm like, oh, okay.
I think it's, he has the knowledge, but like anyone could learn it, but it's just his clan has the knowledge or knows about it, whatnot. Just kind of like you share any technology, one person or one group might have like the first dibs on it or, you know, create it or whatever, but they can share it with other people readily if they want to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And I wasn't expecting that aspect of it. I liked the Pansy's response about that, because like she was really bummed about having to wear this thing for a long time. And just, it was almost kind of a joke where he's just like, oh, well, let me just take it off. And she's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then he says, you know, anyone can do it. And she's like, oh, we're going to have to tell everyone how to do this. Yeah, I mean, definitely, I'm sure. What about you, Crocodile? What any thoughts on this particular episode? Any scenes you want to point out?
Well, one thing that kind of stood out to me in a rather hilarious way was that the very end of the episode, once Goku confronts Tamagami. I almost said Tamagotchi, excuse me.
Yeah.
Confronts Tamagami. He's like, all right, the battle begins now. And then the episode immediately ends. And I just like, I mean, it's not the first time I've encountered this, obviously, but just, I still keep laughing at that bit. It's just funny. Yeah. Some guy's like, all right, now we start. And then the episode immediately ends. It's just, I can't stop laughing.
Yeah. I would say that was probably the biggest part of this episode. I mean, there were two parts, really. There was a sort of the backstory, a little more backstory, like Zeta said, about learning about the relationships between the Glind and the other, you know, Majin and stuff, and learning a little bit about more world and lore building. But then I think really the big aspect of this episode was towards the end when they arrive to fight the Tamagami. We learn that all three Tamagami have the Dragon Balls just literally like in the center of their chests, and you have to defeat them. And then I guess in like pure Toriyama fashion, the Tamagami itself is like, it looks like this big imposing thing. He's got like this big hammer, but then it's kind of goofy because it yells constantly and it's like super loud, and it just,
this has no concept of indoor voice. I mean, granted, they're outside, but even still, Goku's like 2 feet in front of him, so.
The very first thing he says is, what do you want?
Yeah, everything is yelled. So I think that's like the big takeaway is that I actually am kind of surprised. Well, maybe not. I mean, I'm looking at the episode number. We're on episode 7, and I'm like, oh, wow, we're already on episode 7. I'd say the pacing of Daima is good. It's really good. But I am actually surprised we're already on episode 7 and we're at the first Tamagami that we're fighting. So,
I mean, the series is only 20 episodes in total. So like,
that's the problem. That's the problem. I keep forgetting it's 20. See, I'm thinking we're like, you know, 3 episodes away or, you know, 6 episodes away from the end, but we're not even close. Okay.
Yeah. About a third of the way through, I suppose.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention too, this is a minor thing, but I don't know if this is Oda just reusing a design or if he's if he's insinuating something here.
You mean Toriyama?
Oh, who did I say? Oda?
Oda.
Toriyama, excuse me. Toriyama is Oda's idol. But anyway, Toriyama, I don't know if he's reusing this or it's just like, it's like supposed to be a thing, but I just noticed that Hibis looks just like Mr. Popo. Like, he has the same kind of character design.
Really? I don't really think they look much alike, honestly.
Really? You don't?
Not, I mean, just because they have the lips or something? Or
Well, it's just their whole body shape and everything. They're kind of squat, and they got the big round heads and the lips. I don't know. I just thought they kind of looked similar.
I don't know.
Is that just me? Okay. Hibis. I'm looking at pictures of them right now.
I mean, I definitely remember what they look like. I just don't really, I don't know. They didn't really seem that similar to me.
Yeah, the eyes are kind of different now that I'm looking at it. I just remember thinking in that scene that maybe they were, I thought maybe there was something to that. But now that I'm looking at it, maybe not. They're just kind of dopey looking Majin, I guess. I don't know.
They're round fellows, basically. Yeah, but they have no relation or, and there's nothing, there's no connection there. It's just, yeah,
okay. Just round fellows. Right. That's just, that's me trying to read too much into something, I think, that's not there. Overall, good episode, in my opinion. Again, looked great, and pacing's fast, and it's funny. I mean, it had lots of moments of levity in it.
I guess we probably should say briefly that Kibito didn't come along with, like we mentioned earlier, that Hybris arrived to pick up the rest of the crew over at, in the Kami's Tower. So it's Piccolo and Vegeta, and then Bulma came with them, not Kibito as normally planned. And so they've arrived at the Demon World, and they'll obviously play a bigger part in the series moving forward now that they're here. But yeah, I just figured maybe mention that, but yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was a brief bit of them arriving as well in this episode. So like Bulma walking around and stuff, and they're complaining about the smell and stuff. So, all right, so that's Daima. Let's move on to Dandadan. Dandadan episode 2. That's a space alien, ain't it? So here's a quick rundown. Unless you, and so unless somebody else reads this, I'll do it. I don't. We're kind of making this up ahead. As we go. Okay, I'll do it real quick.
Your notes, so.
All right. So Momo decides that she can't possibly call Okarun Ken Takakura. So she's now been forever labeled Okarun.
Okarun, just to be clear.
Okarun. Yeah, thank you. Which is like otaku-kun. It's supposed to be like similar to that. Or not otaku, occult. Occult-kun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Okarun. They get to hit her grandma's temple, but there's a barrier that whenever he tries to walk through it, he gets burned because he's possessed by a spirit. She takes the barrier off, but that doesn't prevent him from his, like, it does. She's able to, like, save him from getting burned by taking the, I don't know what they call seal. Those things.
The seal.
Yeah, like the demon
first
seal.
Yeah, she swirls him in the river and then takes the seal off.
Yeah, and, okay, anyway, I got to keep moving quick on this. I keep falling back into my old habits of describing everything. Anyway, he has a goofy haircut. They go back and they go into the house. They change clothes. She asks him, did he really have his banana stolen? And apparently he did. And she wants to look at it. And he's like, no. And he says, and she's kind of giving him some like a hard time here a little bit. But then they actually have a really nice sort of touching moment of a talk about high school cliques and how they won't really be friends when all this is over and everything.
And then he calls her a bitch.
Yeah.
I was going to mention that if you hadn't, because I think that's actually important. It shows he has some like actual spying. Like it was. Yeah. So it shows
it's a great moment. I want to talk about that more in a moment, but that was really good. I mean, the whole scene with the, like them discussing cliques is very like low key and like, they're very like, you kind of think for a moment, they're kind of connecting, but then he throws that out because he's had his like ego bruised and it's really good. Anyway, we'll get to that. Then suddenly a spirit appears and these big stone walls appear around the whole temple, basically enclosing them, preventing them from escaping. When we come back from the commercial break, we learn that it's possible that spirits actually might just be aliens, because Okarun says that this is actually an alien, not a spirit. So there's some, I think that's part, maybe that's part of this world.
At the very least, there's like some sort of connection or connective tissue between the idea of aliens and the idea of spirits.
Yeah.
I will say it gets delved into further in the series. Like, aliens and spirits are not the same in the series, but there is a connection, which we'll go into later.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, one thing we do learn is that this, whatever it is, alien, was sent by those other aliens to get his, you know, I don't know, understand. I guess they're still trying to steal his banana, even though they don't know it's already gone.
To be clear, he lost his junk because of Turtle Granny. The aliens.
Right. Okay. I get that, but okay. They don't know that. Right.
Well, even Momo says something like, "What? You got another one down there?"
Oh yeah, that's funny.
I only bring it up because someone might mention thought when you brought up the banana earlier that it was in reference to the aliens, but it was actually Turbo Granny. But yeah, just want to clear
I was trying to say that earlier, that it's the Turbo Granny stolen it. Anyway, he transforms into the Turbo Granny, uses the power of the Turbo Granny to fight back. When he does this, he has this like weird mannerism change where he's suddenly like, no, this is totally bumming me out. Yo, I'm bummed. Yo, he's like, sounds really weird. Momo hates this. The episode pretty much ends with Momo fighting, and she does this really clever technique where she has the big monster basher against a wall, which ends up creating a cavity by which she can then grab Okarun towards her, put up the seal, and it only burns the monster, and they end up surviving. And that's the episode. One last bit of note here in my notes is that, interestingly enough, they showed the full opening again and a cut ending. I don't know if this was a mistake or if this is going to continue. I kind of hope it continues, but I don't know.
I feel given the way the ending was played without any like imagery, just no visuals, like a credits scroll, I think it's just maybe the tape they got, that's how it's formatted. So that's my suspicion. It doesn't feel like it'll be
they don't actually play like the. I didn't watch this episode live because the first episode they showed the ending, right?
Right.
With the cat thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But so this time they didn't show. It wasn't like a sped up or cut version of the cat. It was just a scroll.
Yeah.
It was the music with scroll, and it was still cut.
Okay, but they didn't have like the visuals though. Okay.
No visuals. No. Huh. Did this original episode have the visual ending? I would assume it did.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, so yeah, I watched it online. And yeah, it has the normal ending with whatever that mascot is. A lucky cat? Yeah. I don't know what
we'll
it is.
We'll find that soon enough.
All right, so this time, Crocodile, why don't you start? Any particular things you want to point out about this episode? Thoughts, opinions, scenes, moments?
Well, I did like the battle. I very much enjoyed because there was a lot of like... Okarun and Momo were actually kind of working together, thinking things through. Like, it was actually Okarun was like, oh, I maybe use Turbo Granny's powers if you like, could control them. And then it was obviously Momo kind of took the, so there was that teamwork between them at that point. And of course, Momo kind of took control of the battle on her end after she got super pissed at the basically sumo alien for cheating. Wasn't necessarily clear, I felt, in episode itself, but like the reason like Momo didn't get crushed by the aliens because she was using her psychic powers to protect herself. Like, her powers kind of work a little bit like the Invisible Woman's, and I guess maybe we don't want to spoil stuff, but like they'll explain it a little better.
I kind of assumed that.
Or it'll show it a little better in future episodes, but like she gets in more fights. Like, you can see Momo is a very proactive protagonist. Like, she gets in the thick of things and throws punches as much as anyone else. Which I think is true of credit, and I think is obviously a big distinction between a lot of other female protagonists in shonen series. Like, she gets down and dirty as well. So, like, I thought, I loved the fight the first time I saw it. I love it again. It was just very well choreographed, animated. There was great teamwork between Okarun and Momo, and then the way she took control at the end, I think, was extremely clever. And so it was just a very enjoyable fight.
And interesting color palette, too.
Oh, yeah, once it got everything black and white and everything, yeah, that worked very well. I did want to mention quickly, like, the reason the alien was able to sneak in is because Momo had taken the seal off to let Okarun in, and she's got to put it back on. And so, kind of bring that back, like, okay, like, using space that way to put the seal back on, but make sure her and Okarun were outside the effective range so he didn't get affected was extremely clever. Like, again, I just thought I was... a wonderful fight, a wonderful episode. Like, I loved the first one I saw, and I loved it again now.
Yeah, and another interesting sort of overlap between aliens and spirits, where she's able to use this seal, even though it's intended for spirits, works on this alien.
And kind of, I don't know how much this actually matters, but Okarun, he for a while tries using his like Turbo Granny powers or whatever you call it, but he basically wears him out super quickly at this point. He actually was not very useful in this encounter. He like cut off a few fingers and that was all he did, and then he was kind of like out. He even says like he wore him out really quickly. I'm assuming he gets more in tune with it or whatever, but
yes, I don't think it's spoiled to say that he gets better at it with time. But
yeah,
Seda, what are your any thoughts or scenes or moments you want to point out?
I mean, the relationship between the two characters is interesting in that You can tell there's, how do I put this? They're getting more comfortable with each other. they're not just treating each other like strangers. Like, you know, even in the more light moments where she's like joking about his hair, and even when she kind of jokes with him, like, can I see your crotch? You know, like, they have to have some comfort with each other just to kind of tease him like that. Right. But then, you know, It does get a little bit more serious about, like, you know, what we talked about earlier with like cliques and who you hang out with and, you know, how you treat other people and things like that. Obviously that was all upended by this mysterious figure at the door that turned into a big battle, but I'm curious to see, you know, this kind of growing relationship between these two characters, which obviously seems to be a core tenet of the show. So,
yeah, I think that the moment when Okoroon kind of, not really under his breath, but just kind of just says, bitch, because it was so out of left field, out of my realm of expectation for this character, and in a way that I liked it a lot, because the obvious generic anime tropey character stereotype would not have allowed him to do that. He wouldn't have stood up for himself in this moment. He typically, characters like him, which he obviously is different, but that fit the mold of the sort of nerdy, you know, nobody that, you know, is so lucky to speak with the hot girl in school. Like, he would never stand up to that. He would never have the cojones to set to. And he was, and what was really interesting. Yeah, you know what I mean.
I
literally.
Joke. No, I know. I totally agree with you. I'm just, it was funny in the context, but yeah, please.
The irony.
But also, like, the thing I also like about it too is that it shows that it's not only that he's standing up, but that, like, she was actually, I think, in that moment, really trying to be nice. Because he's asking, you know, they're talking about, like, are we going to be friends after all this? Because we're obviously from different worlds. You know, you're only helping me because of this and situation. After this is over, where I'm sure we're not going to be friends. It's like from the movie The Breakfast Club, basically, from the 80s. It's the same concept. And when she's kind of talking down about, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, you're just this kind of person. And I don't, maybe, you know, I think we could be friends, but I don't know. But, you know, but at the same time, she's really, I don't know how to put this, but, like, she's demeaning him.
Damning him with faint praise, kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's like a really shallow, I don't even think she realizes it, but the way she's talking, she's kind of talking about him in a way that's very demeaning.
She's, like, trying to be helpful, and he, like, understands that, but, like, he's, like, he doesn't want to be pitied. Like, he is a person, yeah. Like, he has pride. Like, he wants help, but not be, he's not a pity project for someone.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. He doesn't like being treated like something, a pitiable person. And so he spoke up in that moment, and it was that's like the best moment of the episode for me, because I was just like, wow, what a fresh take on this character trope. And I like that. I think it's the biggest thing I keep taking away from Dandadan is that this show keeps surprising me with its originality. And this is another example of that.
You've seen these archetypes, as you said, multiple times before, and we're going to keep seeing them for the rest of human history. But just like, they're, even in these two episodes, they're a lot more well-rounded than these archetypes they inhabit, which is just given, you know, what we've seen in most media. So, all to their credit.
Yeah,
this is a less thoughtful comment, I think, compared to what we've been talking about here. But my bar for, like, anime sometimes is really low, unfortunately. Yeah. Here's what I mean. So, like, there's the end of the episode where Momo is in the little crater on, like, the side of the wall. She grabs Okoroon, they embrace, and then, like, the whole place kind of just, like, falls apart in this sort of magical spirit explosion or whatever, right? As it goes all back to normal, and they're sitting there embracing each other, and I just fully expected him to be like someone to be embarrassed.
Yep.
Like, one of the characters to be like, I didn't mean to touch you, like, we're just, you know, that was nothing happened, but the, you know, like, kind of like overdo it, you know, like, protest too much, like, I didn't mean to, you know, embrace you or hug you or touch you or nothing weird. But no, they just literally just were, you know, making sure that each other were safe, and then they just stopped, and that was it. Nothing was said. And that was how it should have been. And so, am I making sense? Like, I'm kind of glad. Totally
I thought the exact same thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of moments like that in the series where you expect, like, oh, I've seen so many anime. Here comes stupid anime hijinks. And like, no, they're acting like actual human beings. Like, they're teenagers, but they're acting like, you know, reasonable teenagers, even in the context of all the supernatural nonsense. And it's refreshing.
They're the most, I don't know, maybe most is a harsh word, but they're some of the most realistic depictions of teenagers I've seen in anime so far.
Let's say in shonen, let's maybe narrow it down a little.
Maybe. That's true. But in shonen, yeah. But regardless, subverting expectations is the phrase I will use that this show has done. It's only been two episodes, and I'm just keep saying, I'm like surprised that it's doing these things. I thought the same thing, Seda, in that scene. I was just expecting it. I was like waiting for it. Where's the moment where they get all blushy? They don't do it. And that's refreshing. I like it. And the last thing I'll say is that it almost goes without saying, this episode looked so good. Like top to bottom, from frame one to the end, everything looked great. Every camera angle they chose to use, every animation technique, all of it. It's just, this is like One Punch Man season one or Mob Psycho level of quality to me.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but the show is
it is for me. I'm going to go that far. I think it looks great.
Oh, it
does. I think there's a lot of really talented people working on this show.
Well, there are.
I'm actually not familiar. I'm actually not really familiar with this studio and what else they've done. Science Saru.
Yes,
they've done a lot recently.
If you're not, again, if you don't have any issues being horribly depressed, watch Devilman Crybaby.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that and I'm aware of it. I just haven't seen it.
You should. But again, it gets dark, but it's amazing. But
yeah, they did the recent anime version of Scott Pilgrim for Netflix.
Oh yeah, that's true.
I think they animated one or more of the Star Wars Vision shorts. That's where I first heard about them, was from them. Okay. Well, that's it for Don to Don. Let's move on to Bleach. Bleach episode 10, The Battle. And that's what most of this episode is. Quick rundown. Kenpachi Zaraki versus Retsu Unohana. It's the big battle. It's the end of the battle. It's the completion. We learn that Kenpachi, this whole time, all throughout Bleach, has been suppressing his true abilities. He doesn't want to defeat certain people. Yeah, he's like holding back because he's waiting for people to challenge him.
He wants a better fight, basically, not kill people too quickly.
Exactly. Apparently, they both have. That's the big thing we learned in this episode. They both have this lust for the perfect battle, where their lives are truly at stake. And what we thought last week,
I was wrong.
We were both wrong. Yeah, it turns out she's been healing herself every time, or him and herself. Every time one of them dies, she's been using her power to heal them instantly.
Kind of feels obvious in retrospect. Even the way that it was shown in the first episode made it look like, did that actually happen or no? Like, he gets stabbed in the neck. He did, but it was just healed immediately.
Oh, you're thinking it was like all illusions or like...
I think you left at that point. I thought Kenpachi was like realizing he had some sort of like precognition or something. Like, he was seeing things that could happen and avoiding it. Like, that's what I was thinking. He was like imagining it in his head in some way. But no, he did get stabbed in the neck. He was just healed immediately. So I was wrong. Yeah. And it kind of feels obvious in retrospect. Of course she would heal it. That's what she does.
She's a healer. Yeah. Well, she does this because she says that the only way for Kenpachi to truly unlock his higher levels of power is for him to die. He has to literally face death in order to get stronger, and nobody's been able to do that, so she's doing it for him right now. She uses her blood Bankai, which is, I guess, menacing. I don't know. I thought it was all right.
It reminds me of Alucard's special move from Hellsing. Remember when he does that in the end of the series? A lot less cool, though, but...
All right, let me keep going real quickly and then we'll talk about it. Ends up that she ends up dying in order for him to become stronger. And I guess because she finally faced him, we there's a lot about their backstory I'm just skimming over, but they had a backstory and stuff when he was a little kid and stuff. Anyway, we come back from the commercial break. We see Ichigo and Renji. They arrive at the new area. It's this area that's got this very, this guy who's like, he's like a pop star or a rapper or something. He's like this like musician, and he has all of these women around him, and he's performing like a concert, and it's over the top and everything. He reminds me of that guy from Bleach a little bit, who rhymed all the time.
Oh, Killer Bee from Killer Naruto? Killer
Bee, a little bit. Just
trying, that's Naruto. Is that what you meant to say?
Yeah, you said from Bleach.
Oh, sorry.
This is Bleach.
Yeah.
Yeah, similar. Like, this guy doesn't do, like, he does more, like, catchphrases than rhyming, but similar vibe. So.
We learned that this guy is the guy who invented the Zanpakuto. He created the original Zanpakutos and gives them out to people and stuff.
Didn't Muramasa create the Zanpakuto? I'm referencing filler.
I don't know. Is that a thing?
Like, I was trying to land, like, who the hell is Muramasa? I don't remember that character, but yeah.
Yeah, he like incited a Zanpakuto rebellion against the Soul Society. I think it happened in the middle of the Hueco-Mundo arc.
Forget it ever happened.
But this is a filler thing that never happened.
Yeah, this is the real story.
I mean, it was very clear that some of that filler or ideas that Kubo was seeding that he took pick up and pull into the actual canon. Like, for example, some of that, it's maybe spoilers, I guess, so I won't go too much into it. But there are some things from that arc, the Zanpakuto arc, that ends up being canon in later in this arc. So
yeah, Zanpakuto have like souls. I don't know if they're souls, but they have like they're alive in some fashion.
Yeah,
yeah, and there's some direct references that become canon, but regardless, yeah. Muramasa is not a person who's real, but. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, it turns out all these women that were surrounding him, as well as these other people that he's got standing around, are not real people. They are like Zanpakutos made into humanoid form. He created them. They're artificial people. He throws Ichigo and Renji down into this pit where they're going to fight a whole bunch of these things called the Asa Uchi, which are basically blank Zanpakutos before they've been given to Soul Reapers. This is their form. They're just sort of like a blank slate. And he's just forcing them to fight them. And if they survive, then they can move on to the next area. When we come back, we learn it's been 71 hours. Renji has successfully defended himself against all these things, but Ichigo, he's failed. And so Ichigo is going to get sent back, I guess. And that's kind of where we left off. Okay, so thoughts on this episode, Seda?
I guess I'm not a big Zaraki fan. I'm not a big Kenpachi Zaraki fan, and I like, oh, cool, he's even stronger now, and cool, he's even more bloody and vicious, and I don't know, whatever. That's what I think.
I mean, leave it up to Kubo to fridge a woman in the service of a man. Like, you know, it's, you know, it's kind of like some gender discussion, but it is a enjoy Bleach, but it is pretty much a recurring theme that, like, a lot of its female characters are not well treated, even if there's some of them are still a lot of fun or cool or whatnot.
Like, I'm still waiting for Yoroichi to show up somewhere. Where is she?
She'll eventually show up. So, but yeah, like, sure, like Rukia and Yoroichi, I think, are kind of standouts, even though still, like, they still have their less than ideal moments. But it's definitely like Bleach is definitely a man's world, and I do think kind of, oh, we found out Uehana is like a cool super badass, and oh no, now she's dead, so Zaraki can get this power boost kind of, but it's just like, come on, bro.
I will say he did take this Uehana character in a direction I wasn't expecting, and I liked that she was like ruthless, and I don't know, I liked how powerful she was, even though it ultimately didn't matter. But
like, it feels like she should have, like, isn't two badasses better than one? Like, I just don't feel, putting aside the kind of shitty gender politics inside, which is, you know, something that Kubo deserved criticism for, I'm not sure if Kenpachi was made strong enough to compensate for the loss of Uehana. Like, I never feel like that I was entirely persuaded that trade-off was worth it. So, but...
Yeah. Well, there was a whole, like, pretty much story arc here about them, you know, she found him when he was a child. He had killed, like, a bunch of people, but he was still bloodthirsty, and they kind of like, and what we discussed earlier turned out to be true. Apparently Kenpachi is kind of like a title. Like she was a Kenpachi and she wanted to pass the title on to another Kenpachi. And so now he's the only Kenpachi, the true Kenpachi. It has something to do with being like the most powerful bloodthirsty person or something.
Yeah, like they keep calling Vizoraki of Kenpachi or something that sort near the end of the episode to really emphasize that fact.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, Kenpachi is one of the only like captains who hasn't shown a Bankai. I imagine he's going to get it before this is over.
I mean, he hasn't shown a Shikai.
Shikai, too.
Yeah, he's the only captain who hasn't shown off the Shikai. And there are a few captains who haven't shown off their Bankai yet.
I even forgot that was a thing because it's become such a standard. Like, oh, yeah, they all have Shikais, which is kind of like just their normal stance or their normal.
Yeah, that's like Luffy not using Gear 2 anymore. Yeah.
So, like, the speech at the end from who he's speaking with, that his Shikai is now.
Sword.
He has it now. Yeah. So, like, he'll use it in an upcoming fight, but he has it now. But here.
Yeah, but before now, his sword was just a tool, and now he's going to become, like, you know, an actual Soul Reaper with an actual Zanbakuto and actual abilities. And wow, and now he's even stronger. It's like, yeah, I don't know, it's mildly cool, but still, it's kind of a little bit whatever to me.
You have anything else about this episode, say? Any comments? Are you good?
Renji passing when Ichigo failed is a little bit hard to swallow. Like, okay, sure.
Okay, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. Our perfect character lost? What?
Renji hasn't really been, like, very... he's kind of like... I don't know, what character is Renji? He doesn't accomplish a whole lot in this show. In this whole series.
The Worf isn't... Is he, like, the guy who's supposed to be cool?
He's not even, like, a Worf. He's just more like a punching bag. He's not even, like, supposed to be cool. He gets some, but they're very small.
He does get some moments in upcoming arc. Like, he does get an upgrade here, so he does get some moments, but he's still Renji, I suppose, but...
Yeah. You got anything, Crocodile?
No, we're just basically setting... I believe my recollection is this is setting up for the big Ichigo flashback arc, where he learns more about his past, which was, I recall, being kind of cool, if really, really convoluted, but... So, I just look forward to that. No. Besides, though, like, it sucks that Unohana basically got fridged for the sake of Kenpachi. That's, I still feel that's kind of shitty, but it is what it is, I suppose.
Yeah, they're kind of like, there's a bit here at the end of the episode where we kind of hear this new Squad Zero guy. He's basically being like, you know, Ichigo, you're not a real Soul Reaper. You're a substitute Soul Reaper. You don't have what it takes, and all this stuff about him actually being able to be worthy of a Zanpakuto and stuff. He really gives him a lot of grief about the fact, like, you broke your Zanpakuto. Who do you think you are? That kind of stuff.
I mean, he's not wrong in that sense. Like, the way Ichigo became Soul Reaper was very out of kind of whack, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I kind of I get it. I get a sense of, like, tough love, kind of. Maybe love's hard word, but you know what I mean? Like, that kind of tough training attitude from this guy where he's like, just giving it to him straight. It's like, you're just not strong enough, dude. Which again, I kind of agree with Seda in hindsight. I didn't think about that until Seda said it, but like, I'm kind of surprised here. Like, Ichigo is like, what? Why is he suddenly weak now? I don't know. All right. Again, Bleach continues to look really good too. I mean, it's like, they've got money behind this show, I guess. Looks good. Well, let's move on to Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist Episode 10, Unbowed and Unbroken. Let's go through the quick rundown here. This one's even shorter than the previous shows. So, Impure King has appeared. His core has appeared, and it looks kind of like a weird bug to me.
Yeah.
Just a big monster. I don't know. It's kind of weird looking.
I saw people in the thread say it looked like a Gigantamax Pokemon.
Yeah. It looks kind of like a centipede a little, too. It's just weird. There's a big fight between Toto and the priests. and they end up using, he can apparently absorb their flames. And so the Yukio uses this against him by making him overabsorb too many flames. And it's so much that it actually turns him into ash. But because it's raining, the ash sort of like crumbles him and melts him. But we learn that that's ultimately not, he's not dead. He's going to reform kind of like in Terminator 2, you know, he's going to like come back together, I guess. I think we even see his like hand come out at one of them. Well, at one point.
He's even like flying around like his broken kind of muddy, goopy body parts are like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like Majin Buu getting split up. Go ahead.
No, I thought they actually got him this episode, but then you see him fling his body parts at the other priests, and it's like, okay, he's not actually done. I was like, oh, okay, I thought his villain's going to be around for a long time. Oh, but
yeah,
okay,
I'm surprised too. I thought for sure this guy was going to be gone by the end of this arc. So,
no, I mean, I thought he might have been a long term player, but then I saw him get beat. Like I saw make them absorb the power plant. That's seen in a lot of shows before, so I expected that. I saw that coming, even though I have not seen the episode before. But I actually thought they beat him. So I was like, oh, okay, because he's going to be done with this episode. He's not going to be a long-term villain, but he's not actually dead. And he's like, he did a counterplay at the very end, and we don't see how it play out. And so I was like, oh, okay, so, they fooled me. I thought they got him, but they did not.
Yeah, I was surprised too. So after the break, everyone has escaped the barrier, with the exception, of course, Rin and Bon or whatever are in there. Shura goes running in to help. But she runs in there, but I don't think we see her again this episode.
Well, I think she runs in there, and then she sees Rin like running up the big bug, and she says something. But she's like there. She hasn't like done anything, but she's there, and she's like at least observing what Rin is doing at this point.
Okay, Rin can't draw the sword. He's really depressed about this. He's really bummed out. He can't defend anybody, and then he kind of like realizes that he needs to relax. And so he just starts talking about how much he wants to go to Kyoto Tower, which of course really pisses off Bon. He's like, why are you thinking about that right now? And he's like, oh man, I just can't wait to see it. And oh, it's just some stupid tower. You don't you want to see the temples and stuff? And he's like, oh, I just thought the temple looked cool. And it's like, it's just Rin kind of going back to his like more innocent way. And that's what gives him the kind of like courage to be like, okay, I can finally do this. And he pulls the sword out. And
well, it seemed to me like he was trying to lighten the mood because they're both on the precipice of death. So he's just kind of like pump himself up and pump Bon up. So I thought it was kind of, it's something he's done before, very much in character. Silly, but I think obviously effective.
Yeah, it works because he pulls the sword out and he's able to start to fight. So, and that's pretty much the episode.
Yeah, Bon's basically like, okay, Rin, you convinced me. Like, Bon's trying to do his heroic sacrifice, tell Rin to get away. But Rin convinced Bon, like, okay, Rin, I put my faith in you. You know, go get him, bro. And then Rin goes and gets him, basically.
Yeah. Any thoughts about this crocodile?
Besides the whole, like, I thought the villain would be finished, but it wasn't, so it was pretty funny. There's one more thing I wanted to say, and I'm blanking on it now.
There's a part in this episode where Mephisto is doing his Mephisto things, where he kind of just is like a chaotic observer, and he refers to Rin as little brother. And
he's
I don't
done
know
that before.
Is that like actual familial brother, or just like we're both demon kin or whatever?
I think it's the latter. That's okay. My impression.
Like not literally like I am also related to Satan. Just we are both demons. Hence
yeah,
you
it's
are
not
my
like
brother.
It's not like we're okay. A twist. Like it's just because we're all demon kin.
Right.
Like I think the other guy with the green hair also referred to Rin as a brother.
I think that guy is literally Mephisto's brother, if I remember correctly. But I'm
oh yeah, I think the green haired guy and Mephisto are actually related. But I think the green haired guy referred to Rin as a brother as well.
Oh,
if
sure.
I remember right.
But yeah, I kind of figured it was just like, hey, we're all demons or at least part demons or whatever. So, okay.
Anything else, Crocodile?
Unfortunately, I cannot remember what the point I was trying to say.
Well, think.
I remember. Okay. I remember. It was how Rin wanted to go to this tower and Bond's like, I've lived here all my life and I've never been to that tower either. I thought that was a very funny moment and very like
relatable.
Realistic for people who've lived.
Yeah.
You've lived in a place all your life, but never gone to the tourist sites because you're just like, I have the time to do whatever, so I'm never going to bother. That was both funny and very realistic.
Yeah. Seda.
The girls are in this episode and they're still all gooped up. They're still in their predicament.
I mean, she did use a little bit of her power, but yeah,
she's like summoning all these different plants to like counteract the goop.
Yeah,
we still didn't waiting see for the... Mamuji yeah. to show up again. I'm assuming she's gonna help out the girls. That's my assumption.
Somehow. Which character?
Mamushi, the snake girl. Woman, actually.
Wasn't she still like sick or injured from...
I'm working on an assumption that she has to redeem herself in some form. Like, this is kind of basically all her fault.
I mean, it could be in a future arc, though. Maybe. But, you know.
Yeah, I kind of figured she has to have some sort of, like, end of season, like, you know...
Redemption.
Even if it's a small part. But not yet. We'll see.
I agree. I think you're right. I think you're right on the money, too. I bet she comes in and saves these girls. Which is... whatever. But sure. Yeah, that's something. Yeah. Yeah.
I think there will be value in Shiemi saving this day just because she's been kind of down on herself and been like, oh, now my friend is back. Now I'm going to do something. So there could be value in that too. But yeah. I guess you're not wrong. Maybe she comes back. But my assumption that she was down for the count for rest arc, but we'll see, I suppose.
Yeah. And I don't really have anything to add to this episode. It was okay. It wasn't like a really great episode. It was just sort of like, yeah. I mean, I didn't hate it or anything. I just felt like we were kind of like going through what was necessary for the story to progress, and having the Toto guy. I don't know. I'm just surprised that they didn't beat him. I thought Yukio's like trick was going to be his downfall, but that it's not just kind of almost left a sour taste in my mouth a little, because I'm like, well, we can't get a win on this guy.
It depends, again, if he's going to be a long-term player or not. Like, yeah. So,
anyway. I mean, I guess I liked the scene where, you know, Rin kind of, like, does his thing, where he just sort of, like, becomes really, like, lighthearted in the heat of the battle. And that's like, oh, this is the solution. Okay, I like that. Yeah, I don't know. It's okay.
There's two more episodes, and I guess, to kill the Imperial King with blue fire.
Yeah, I would say probably one more episode to kill that, and then an epilogue episode to like finish off the season. All right, we've got one more show. Crocodile's got to go. Thank you very much for being here. And we will move on to One Piece. One Piece, episode 738, The Brothers Bond, the untold story behind Luffy and Sabo's reunion. And that is exactly what this episode is. Quick rundown. We now see how, in detail, Sabo learned about Ace dying. So he reads it in the newspaper. Ace has been executed. And of course, that gets him his memory back. And there's a big, long scene about him crying over that. Yeah, everybody.
Very long scene.
Very long scene. Like it's the kind of thing that you joke about where like someone's going for their Oscar, you know. It's like that.
Like, how many panels was this in a manga? Maybe a
probably
page.
One or two, right? Yeah, this is Toho pacing, so yeah, pretty bad. So anyway, yeah, it's almost like the whole thing before the commercial break is this. Anyway, we come back from the commercial break and they've finally gotten him to calm down. He goes and he visits Ace's grave, which happens to be right next to Whitebeard. And then we get a replay of the reunion scene between Luffy and Sabo from this arc. I can't tell if it was exactly the same. I think it was. It's been a while.
I think earlier in the arc they kind of skipped over this scene a little bit. They only showed us like, I don't know, they showed us like Luffy and Sabo briefly meeting, but we didn't actually see the whole encounter. So now they're kind of filling in that gap. Like, we definitely did not see like Luffy fling himself onto Sabo's neck and hug him in a
oh that's a weird right position. We got the face, like the NL face from Luffy, but we didn't. Yeah, you're right. I guess that other stuff was new.
Like, here's what they actually said when Luffy realized Sabo was alive. So,
yeah.
Luffy kind of being his usual awkward self.
It's
Luffy being Luffy, very true to his emotions, and it's an emotional moment, like, sensibly so, but he's also being a little bit goofy. Like, yeah. Do you really have to hug him like that?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I have, like, I'm not the biggest fan of Luffy. I like One Piece a lot, but Luffy's kind of like the one thing in One Piece I don't love.
Yeah.
And there are a few minor other things I don't love about One Piece, but Luffy's kind of like my one thing where it's like, he's just the most stubborn protagonist to a fault. And like his mannerisms and stuff, like he straight up does things from time to time that actually ends up like causing grief to other people just because he's stubborn. And I like it's got like there's echoes of Goku there, but like it's sometimes it's a little worse to me because he's so knuckleheaded and stubborn about things. And I mean, I know a lot of people like those aspects of Luffy, but I don't like when he's so strong-willed to a fault, I guess. And this is a moment where we get a kind of different side of him where he's just like bawling his eyes out from like happiness and regret and everything. And it's like, okay, I like this. I like to see Luffy vulnerable. You almost never see it. You know what I mean? He's always just too good. He's too strong or too valiant or whatever. And it's like, I like to see a vulnerable, like one of my favorite scene, I think maybe in all of One Piece is the scene from Sabaody when he's crying and after his teammates have, you know, his crew have been taken away and he couldn't defend them. Like that's real. That's real. It felt real. It felt genuine. That's how a real person reacts. It's not common for Luffy. Luffy's almost always just like kind of too good to be true. So I like this moment, even though it's a little goofy.
Yeah.
Anyway, real quick here, I can finish off with this rundown. So we cut over, we see Fujitora rolling some dice and ends up getting like, I think, snake eyes or whatever, and which means he will not attack Luffy tonight. He's leaving when he's going to attack Luffy up to the dice, up to a dice roll. And then Sabo ends up finishing his story to everybody at the cabin. And he goes to leave and he just ends up getting onto the back of a bunch of crows and flies away.
I didn't know he could do this. And if they showed it earlier, I forgot.
I think this might be the first time you see this, but it isn't the last.
They might have hinted at it earlier. I don't know. I did not. If you were to ask me, how does Sabo fly? I'd be like, he can fly? Or... Yeah. I don't know. He rides on crows.
That's correct. He rides on crows. That's all I'll say.
How does that work?
One day you will find out, but not today. And that's it. One Piece. A very long, stretched out episode of some stuff we knew and mostly stuff we could infer.
I'm trying to remember. There was a part in the flashback where they're at the Revolutionary Army hideout and they're looking at the newspaper about Marineford, right? And I'm trying to remember. One of the Marines says something like, he's surprised, like, wait, Dragon is Monkey D. Luffy's father?
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. Like they didn't like.
I know this isn't
common knowledge to everyone in the One Piece world, but like even the Revolutionary Army didn't some of the people there didn't know that Dragon, who's their boss, is Luffy's dad, and like Luffy's making a name for himself. I guess this is not it's not like a secret, but like people don't know this.
Yeah,
something like that. I might be misremembering some of the details, but. There was like this exclamation of this.
Well, what about that? Like, just that you're, what do you mean? Like, what's the deal?
I'm just kind of surprised that, like, you know, you would think, oh, yeah, Luffy is Dragon's son. We know that. We talk with Dragon every day. Like,
this has to come up. Yeah, see, I kind of take that. I take that as a, like, Dragon doesn't talk kind of thing.
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know, but like, I'm just saying that, like, I get the impression that he's not the kind of guy to open up and talk. Well, maybe that's not true. I guess I would say that.
I know he's definitely a stoic, you know.
Stoic, yeah. He's a stoic person. Probably no one's ever asked him, or at least that guy had never asked him. And he's like, what, you're? And it's like, well, he probably just doesn't go around advertising it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess it's not really that this is surprising to me. It's more just like more of an acknowledgement that like, oh, even the people who are closest to Dragon don't know this.
Yeah.
Which are his army. So, okay.
Yeah, I thought that was Dragon's reaction to Sabo in that scene was kind of like, just like, it made sense. But I'm just saying that, like, he's just sort of like, what's going on? Like, what? You know, like, he's just sort of surprised that Sabo's breaking down in that moment.
He may not even realize that Sabo knew Luffy.
Exactly. Like, he never saw them together, right? Because he picked up Sabo when he was on his own.
Yeah.
So, and also, I mean, he knew, like everyone else there, that Sabo had lost his memory. So having his memory come back is like surprising to Dragon as well.
I watched this episode online and I saw the preview for the next episode and like, oh, I guess stuff happens.
Oh, I haven't seen the next episode preview because they don't show that.
I guess
you can talk about it. You can talk about it because I've seen all of One Piece.
It previews. We get to see what the other members of the Straw Hats have been up to. They've left the show for dozens and dozens of episodes now. So,
wait,
like Nami and Sanji.
Oh crap!
I think the preview showed them. Like, we get to see what they're doing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gosh,
I don't want to look it up because I don't want to spoil. But like,
no, happening. I'll tell you, it's been so long since I've seen those guys, I kind of forgot that they weren't here.
Nope. They were like, I'm trying to remember, like way, like halfway through this arc, Dressrosa, Doflamingo was like attacked them on the Mary, and Sanji like defended them, and then they're just kind of like, we need to go figure out this Kaido stuff. Like, we need to go that way. And they left the arc. And that was long. That was quite a, that was like a year ago.
Yeah. So it was Sanji. It was Sanji, Nami, and Chopper.
Brooke
was there with them? Okay.
I think so.
Wow. Why did I think Brooke was here?
We need map piece to tell us where these people are.
Maybe this is the one time I need map piece. Oh my gosh. Yeah, they have been gone so long, I forgot about that.
I want to look up I would be careful. I mean, I don't care too much.
Well, here, I can do it. I can do it for
you. I'm just curious, like, how many episodes ago did they leave the arc? Like, was that like a year ago?
It's been a while. Oh, it could be. Yeah. I couldn't find that easily. But yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, I know where they're going and what they're doing. I didn't see the next episode preview. I'm surprised to hear we're going to see some of that, I guess, already.
I'm going to look up I'm being careful.
This is episode 738.
The title of 739 is The Strongest Creature, One of the Four Emperors, Kaido, King of the Beasts.
Yeah.
So stuff happens, I think. So we're introduced to Kaido for real, maybe? I don't know. It looks like if I'm reading this right, we're on episode 738. I'm scrolling back here. I'm on the Wikipedia. Somewhere around 655 is when they left. So more than a year ago.
Yeah.
If I'm reading, they were like when they left the arc. So what have these people been up to? I know it wasn't that long ago, like universe time, but it was a long time ago, episode wise. So
we are surprisingly, we still have about 13 more episodes before we're on to the next arc.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's taking longer than I thought it would to get out of Dressrosa. So we're still here for another 13 episodes. I think maybe this is part of the like Dressrosa fatigue. You know what I mean? Just even with Doflamingo defeated, we still got so much we have to go through.
Yeah, so I just look back. I'm just looking through like the Wikipedia summaries, and thank you whoever like keeps these updated, like some fan or whatever. Episode 655. So the lion's almost 100 episodes ago.
Wow.
Law orders the Straw Hats to head to Zoe immediately. Though the Straw Hats are reluctant to leave their friends behind, they are forced to agree when they are assaulted by a Flying Marine battleship and another one of Doflamingo's attacks, and they basically leave with Caesar. I forgot they still have Caesar with them.
Oh yeah,
heading to Zo. So yeah, that was 80 whatever episodes ago.
You know what the next arc is?
Zo.
Yeah, exactly. So us seeing them in the next episode is just is almost certainly like going to be a glimpse or something. Yeah, I don't think much cannot be revealed because they're not there yet. So whatever, you know. Well, I want to say that, but I would just say that we are not there yet. The audience isn't going to get there for another 13 episodes or so. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that is it for the rundown. Anything we want to talk about moment-wise or award-wise?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Obviously, we have plenty of time left, but I have a feeling that both of these Don to Don leads will end up as character nominations. I already nominated the voice for Momo, Abby Trott.
I paid special attention this episode to listen to her performance, and you're right on the money about it. Like, she's really knocking it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I like her character.
I like both these characters, her especially right now. Yeah. But you know, we have plenty of time to like nominate them later, so
yeah,
we can wait.
Yeah, we don't nominate best looking shows because otherwise, I was going to say
they all get nominated. Yeah,
they're going to. There's some tough contenders this year.
I don't think anything in Daima. That was kind of a transitionary episode. Nothing in One Piece. Blue Exorcist, like best fight. I guess we should just nominate it just to like have it like Toto versus Yukio and the. And what do you call the shrine people?
The priests. They're called the priests. Yeah. I have to, now that I take notes when Toonami's on,
we have to watch it again.
Well, no, I take notes while I'm watching it, but I have to turn the closed captioning on so that I can get names and stuff right. So I can write them down. I was like wondering when I was taking my notes, I'm like, these are exorcists. I wrote down like exorcists fight Toto. And then on the screen, it flashes priests. And I'm like, I guess these are priests, not exorcists. Okay.
Yeah. I actually remember there was an earlier episode where the priests and the exorcists are actually kind of at odds with each other.
Yeah, that's right.
Like the exorcists had like a certain way to heal like the sick, and the priests were like, no, that's demon magic. You can't do that. And whatever. But yeah,
so Yukio and priests.
Yukio and priests versus Toto and Toto and the fire thing that he ingested. But you can just say Toto.
Yeah,
like, I don't know if that's the best fight, but like it's a fight probably the most. I mean, in Blue Exorcist, that's a more.
Oh yeah, there's nothing going on with this.
It's more of a fight than everyone else versus Blobby Mist. Thing.
Yeah, that's kind of been my big letdown of this arc. I think this arc's been pretty good, but this whole fight with the miasma monster is just sort of like a nothing to me because he's not a good villain. It's just a nothing.
Biggest disappointment. The impure king is a big blob bug monster thing.
Impure king.
The impure king is just you can just say impure king. Yeah, the impure king is this thing. Okay. Yeah. Like, if you were to ask me, like, oh, this is a demon sealed away by having its eyes separated and held in sacred spots, and if you bring them together, you're going to revive the impure king, this long-lost evil, never to be revived again, and it's this thing. Like, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's not a compelling villain. It's just sort of like a menace. And it's just
Toto is like the villain here.
Exactly. And that's why he's a better fight. Yeah.
And he was just using the Impure King. Like, we talked about this on a previous episode. This whole thing, like, the whole reason why he tricked Mamushi and all of this, and the whole reason why he did all of this was to get access to that Phoenix. That was the whole thing. That was the plan. And he did. Like, okay. Sure. And we'll see what he does, because he's still around, I guess.
Is Toto a nominatable villain?
Best villain, I guess nominate him. He is the villain of this arc. Okay. Really, Toto. It's just
he may not win, but he's definitely the villain.
When we nominate character, when we nominate things, we need to nominate enough things that we can knock them off later.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
We can't just nominate a top three and be like, there it is.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Looking.
I don't think Bleach really had anything. Or I guess best fight. Zeraki versus Unohana. Yeah. Sure, do it.
All right.
We don't have it, do we?
No.
This is our third Bleach fight. Yeah, do it. I don't care too much about these characters. And this was more just a fight for fight's sake, I feel. But sure, we can nominate it. Why not?
Okay. I'm trying to think of character designs. Anyone have a great character design recently we haven't thought about? We haven't really talked about character designs since Lazarus. We've gotten so many new shows. Does anyone stand out to you?
Momo has this sort of like Japanese high school fashion.
Yeah.
And I'm like her key art is like this like skirt and like a pink sweater. That's like her.
Yeah, I think she ends up being, well, because she's all about fashion and stuff. So
right.
I think
she just has a different outfit every episode. Or not every
right,
episode.
Right, exactly.
I'm assuming she changes. So
yeah, it's like Cardcaptor Sakura, where she just keeps changing her outfits all the time.
Or it seems like Okarun is more just in that kind of traditional, I don't know what you call
uniform.
It. Uniform. Yeah. Well, right now she was wearing that at the beginning of the episode before she changed into her sweater. But
I'm willing to put her power, Momo's power, as in a power and ability. What do you think?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And now that in like the first, I don't know. It's like
psychokinesis. It's
like, yeah, it's she can create like. Crocodile was talking about it earlier. Like she can create, like she can obviously she has telekinesis. She can lift things up and move them around with her hands. She has like she can create like barriers. Like
yeah,
it's kind of funny. Crocodile mentioned Invisible Woman or whatever.
Yeah,
not Invisible Woman, but like when I think of barriers, I think of the daughter from The Incredibles. That's what I think of. I forget her
well,
name.
I know
she has the barriers.
I think, have they shown, maybe this might be cultural osmosis leaking in, but like when Momo uses her powers, I've seen stuff from when she uses her powers where it's like you kind of see like hands coming off of her. Has she done that?
It usually changes like the color palette a little bit when she uses it. And also her hair becomes a little bit more flowy. You know, that's pretty normal, but I don't think I've seen hands.
Okay, well, maybe
but I will say, knowing that that's her ability, she shows up in the opening. You know, there's a lot in the opening, but like it shows her using her powers at a few points in the opening, and it makes a lot more sense now that you know that versus the very first episode. It's like, what am I seeing here? Like, oh, she's got psychic powers of some sort.
It's really psychic powers is her power, right?
Yeah, she can do barriers, telekinesis, yeah.
Psychic powers, yeah.
I feel like we need to see more Okarun, whatever you call it, like Turbo Granny Curse power.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want to call it? Like I said in this episode, it hasn't been very effective yet.
It's just him being, he's like tapping into the power of Turbo Granny.
I'm assuming we'll eventually nominate that, but right now it's just, it hasn't been that interesting, to be honest.
Yeah. How do you spell psychic?
P-S-P.
It's P-S-Y something. Psychic?
P-S-Y-C-H-I-C.
H-I-C. That can't be right. That doesn't look right at all.
That is right. It looks like psychic. Only the C-H is a K sound.
Ah, that looks totally wrong to me. Okay. All right.
it's just Google's font. That's my assumption.
Okay.
Best name, I'm thinking.
The problem with Bleach is that I think everyone's been named. Well, except for Yawitch or Yuhabaha. But
I don't even remember like some of these Squad Zero names. Like, yeah, it's the eater woman and the healer guy and the
musician. And it's like, I can't even like their name. We talked about this when Bleach first started airing. They all have the most difficult to remember Japanese names.
Yeah.
Like multi-syllable name. Like there's like four syllables in their first name and six syllables in their family name. And I'm like, I can't remember these. All right. How's that? Is that good for you?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So that'll be it for episode 435. We will return next week for the next episode of 436. Same lineup. Nothing changes. Thank you very much for being here, Seda.
Yep.
And thanks again, Crocodile, for being here. And hopefully this is a little faster this time. So we will continue down this path, and we will see you again next week. And until then, later.